Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Joel and Tony, and we're going to talk about superhero movies today, which I think we all love very much. We've talked about them in the past on this podcast. We've talked about various Thor's and Avengers movies and things like that. Today, we're going to talk about the new ones that are in theaters. We're going to start off with Justice League, and then we're going to move into Thor Ragnarok. So Justice League is kind of the final coming together of all the DC superheroes we've heard about for so long. You got your Batman, you got your Wonder Woman, you may even have Superman. The trailers certainly indicate that he'll be there. Guys, what did you think of Justice League?
I feel that it would have been a decent movie if it could have not gotten in its own way.
Yeah.
I wanted to enjoy it, and it had a lot of interesting ideas, but it felt a little rushed. Mm-hmm. Introducing all the new characters mm-hmm. in the midst of getting them all together. Mm-hmm. And if you took it at 5 or 10 minute intervals, it felt like a different type of movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it was serious. It was not so serious. It wanted you to feel pulse pounding. And other times it was like a comedy
in a
sense. And to me, it was frustrating.
Yeah.
And even the marketing was, they couldn't figure out which way they wanted to go with marketing. Should we keep this secret or should we go other ways with it? And mm-hmm. it frustrated me.
Yeah.
It felt very fractured.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that. And I think like one of the signs that like they gave a lot of each of the characters a little bit of space, but they didn't give them a lot of space for you to appreciate anything about the essence of that character. So like Superman, for example. Right into it.
So I don't think it's a big spoiler, but Superman comes back, and it's like the entire act two of this movie is Superman coming back.
Yeah.
It's all they can talk about. It's all they can do. It's the crux of the plot. And the trailers like teased it over and over again, and the posters teased it, and then it turns out, yeah, it's a huge part of the movie. It's kind of like the only part of the movie.
Some other posters had him on it.
Yeah. Yeah. In the black suit, which he never wore in the movie, which mm-hmm. was strange. Anyway, you were saying, Tony.
Yeah, so thank you for that, because I kind of like caught myself giving away the big spoiler. But I felt like Superman and the Clark Kent and Lois Lane story never gets developed. It wasn't really developed in Batman v Superman, and it still wasn't here. Mm-hmm. So I feel like because I missed Man of Steel, I'm just missing this whole backstory and all the emotion that's charged behind these two actors. So that's just one example, but that kind of theme continues with Jason Momoa does a good job of Aquaman, but it's like, why should I care much about Aquaman? Like, I see that he's charged with this duty. It's in a similar way that Wonder Woman is charged with protecting her realms, the realms of humanity and all this. But why is this person any more important than anyone else? Like, it's not doing a good job of keeping the characters interesting, which you can do in a short space, but it doesn't like even try to give them any anchors or any other people for the center character like Aquaman to riff off of, except for the Justice League. And he's kind of, you know, not sure about if he really even likes them at first. So it's kind of not believable that they would work together, or it's not like they haven't convinced me without a doubt that these guys are all a team, you know?
Right.
And, you know, that's the same problem that, like, you know, Suicide Squad had, where it's like, all right, you're all together. And the plot device is that you have to work together
mm-hmm.
because we couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. Both of you made points that I was ready to lay down myself, but both of you made them for me. Joel, that the movie is fractured and has different tones. Like, sometimes it's an action, sometimes there's little beats of coming together. It's almost like a high school football movie at times when it's like, come on, this is what being a team is all about. Mm-hmm. You know, let's overcome and win the championship or whatever.
Even with Batman being the cheerleader on that.
Yeah.
That just kind of, it doesn't fit with what they were trying to make him as, like this loner, what he is.
Yeah.
And making do, everyone else has these superpowers. And, you know, as they say in the movie, his superpower is he's rich.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a funny line. But he needs to make up for his powers. He needs to create his own powers.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting. But at the same time, he's not a cheerleader.
No.
As you were mentioning. Yeah.
No. Which I think brings us into Tony's point that why should I care about any of these characters? Like, mm-hmm. I don't care. Batman doesn't seem like Batman. Superman seems like Superman, but he's only in the final act. So, you know, Superman should have been the one to bring them together, but for some reason they decided to kill him in the movie that I hate, the previous one, Batman versus Superman. But there were these moments of Wonder Woman talking to Cyborg and trying to convince him, you know, I've had pain too. Like, you know, she's talking about Trevor. And I'm like, who's Trevor? And I'm like, all right, Chris Pine from the last movie? Yeah, like,
from Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Was she really in love with him? I don't know. Like, it didn't seem like, I'm going to draw a parallel with Marvel because I kind of feel like you have to. Right. But Haley Atwell and Captain America had a great love story, I think. You really felt like the two of them, like when he's talking over the radio and she can only listen and you feel terrible that he's going to crash and die and all this stuff. Back in Captain America, the First Avenger,
Right. Really
set up a good love story. But then the Wonder Woman love story, was it a love story? It was more like he was kind of her pet for most of that movie. Like, I'm going to keep this guy around because he's interesting. And then they had a dance, and then I guess that's it. When you dance together under the starlight, and I guess that means you're in love. But I didn't really feel it from Wonder Woman.
Yeah, maybe I felt a little bit more. I thought that the Cyborg, her interactions with Cyborg, I felt were more revealing of her character. Mm-hmm. I did feel it, but at that same point, she also felt like a Cub Scout den leader.
Yeah.
You know, like a pack.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It was just, okay, now let's all get along. And then they're marketing her as like, I don't need, you know, I can just whip this sword out and just beat anyone.
Yeah.
And then, but at the same point, she's like very emotionally vulnerable and just willing to reach out and touch. It just, they needed to draw some limitations on that character, mm-hmm. I thought.
Yeah.
The Cyborg, I kind of was getting there, but not really. And then other times she was going the way of the other way and was kind of getting there. And then I realized, wait a minute, they're like stretching her to be this full spectrum of character.
Yeah, so the movie was like you could almost diagram it out, which I suppose they did, into all five or six of them in a room talking to each other. And then they'd split off into small groups. And these two would talk to each other, and these two would talk to each other, and these two would talk to each other. And a lot of those one-on-ones, mm-hmm. those breakout groups, you could call them, like you do at a work function, just didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. Like Lois Lane talking to Martha Kent in the office just didn't work for me. And Lois Lane's like, oh, I've been a bad journalist since he died. And I'm like, great. Like backstory, wonderful. Like I don't care enough about Lois Lane that she's struggling at work that, you know. Or like the scene of her rolling over in bed and he's not there is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't need her going on and on about how hard her professional life has been with Earl Clark. The one I did like, I'll give them credit, I liked Flash and I liked Cyborg at the graveyard. Mm-hmm. That one worked for me.
Yeah.
So not all of them are bad. Mm-hmm. But the one with Wonder Woman and Batman when she has to reset his shoulder after that fight, like that didn't work for me. What did they do in that scene? They talked for a while and then it was over.
Well, he was still in his cheerleader mode.
Yeah.
You know, we need to stick together. We need to do this. And mm-hmm.
It didn't advance the plot. He's been saying that since the beginning of the movie.
Right.
That's kind of like his slogan in this movie is, let's keep working together. Guys, mm-hmm. let's keep working together. You know?
Yeah. You mentioned, I was going to bring this up before your Marvel parallel.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bring up my own Marvel parallel. I was thinking of the scene from the Avengers Age of Ultron
mm-hmm.
when they're all the Avengers are sitting mm-hmm. together in a room and mm-hmm. on the couch and Mjolnir is on the hammer is on the coffee table and they're trying to lift it off.
Yeah.
I love that scene
because it
showed the characters really playing off of each other. Mm-hmm. They get along well. This is what they are when they're not off saving the world. Mm-hmm. They're having fun with each other.
Yeah.
And they're cool with each other, and I didn't feel that in the Justice League.
And it really hit on that scene in Age of Ultron, it reminded you of each character one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Stark's the first one to stand up. He's the confident one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rhodey's his buddy. He helps him out. All right, War Machine
will
rise to the challenge, but really he's there to help his friend. Black Widow doesn't even try.
Yeah.
Like, she's not even part of that, doesn't want to be part of the discussion. She just likes to sit back and watch other people do their thing. She's a spy. That's what she does.
Right.
We didn't get characterization like that in this movie. We got, this is the funny one, this is the brooding one, mm-hmm. this is the cheerleader, this is the whatever. The other brooding one, like Aquaman and Cyborg, are both the brooding one.
Yeah. And I felt that their characters were sacrificed for laughs.
Yeah.
You know, the whole scene about sitting on the
lasso of
truth or whatever. That was, you know, mildly funny, but I felt that it took away more than it added to the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. If they just, like, we need a point of levity at all costs here, and what's it going to be? I don't know. I don't know why they put that in.
So this was the movie that was directed by Zack Snyder.
Mostly.
Mostly. And then it was finished up by Joss Whedon. So yes. However you do that, it's when you have two different people working on a film, it's kind of hard to mesh it together.
Yes, of course.
I mean, unless you've worked for years and years with that person, but that's not the case in this case.
This doesn't feel like a Zack Snyder movie. I love Zack Snyder. I've seen as many of his movies as I can. It looks like it for sure, with coppers and silvers and blacks and grays. Like, he loves those colors. Mm-hmm. It definitely looks visually like his art style. But it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't play like it. It doesn't sound like it. And it doesn't entirely feel like a Joss Whedon movie either. Like, there's not enough heart. Yeah. As you would get in a Joss Whedon movie, as you got in the Avengers movies,
right.
Which he directed and we're bringing up now in light of this Justice League movie.
The irony.
Yeah.
But the other thing I'm really disappointed in is in the trailers, the bad guy, Steppenwolf, they never show his face.
No. Nope.
They never show, and it's like, oh, and I was excited, like, why are they not showing his face?
Yeah.
And then they show us, it's just...
A CG space alien. Yeah.
It's just a bad guy face.
Yeah.
And I felt that... Come
on. It's not Luther pulling the strings.
Well, DC is just brilliant with most of their villains, especially when you think of like Tim Burton Batman movies and beyond all the Batman movies, really. I mean, the villains are defining to the characters. And that was the problem of Batman v Superman, was the villain was just a big alien, crazy monster. And
he was just a wall to throw your superpowers against.
Yeah.
And... You know, to kill Superman.
And is it really testing you? If the one reason this guy showed up was because Superman was dead and now he can, you know, rule.
Right.
It's like, that's not really a compelling obstacle even for us as audience viewers to try to overcome. You know, it's...
Right.
It doesn't engage our imagination very much.
And first thing they do is bring back Superman. You're like, oh, well, it's going to be okay now.
Yeah, game over. Yeah. So I personally am a big fan of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with Christopher Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, interesting point. There's a part in the movie where the Flash is visiting his father in prison, and he is checking in.
Mm-hmm.
And the warden or whoever is working at that counter is the person who plays Jimmy Olsen in the Superman movies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so by appearing in this film, I think he has actually appeared in more Superman movies than any other Superman actor. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Anyway, and I did, I enjoyed that moment of the film where he wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
From being dead, and he's not happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so there's a lot of Superman 2 in that moment of, was it Superman 2 or 3? It's Superman 3, I believe.
Okay.
When he turns bad and he resets the Tower of Pisa.
Oh, I think you're right.
So there was just like evil Superman moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of like, whoa, like what is wrong? Like what could go wrong?
Yeah.
And his heat ray vision is going off the charts and he's just blasting everything. And to this point, the Flash is this person who can get away with anything until... that scene. And that was probably one of my favorite moments of this movie.
Superman's eye turns.
Yeah, it's just the whole tracking of the Flash. Like, wait, who is in the Flash? Yeah. It's like, whoa, he can see me?
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice touch.
That was a pretty cool little fight scene. I thought it resolved too easily.
Yes.
Unfortunately. But I mean, that's kind of more of what we wanted out of Batman Superman. More rage, I guess.
Yeah. He like controlled, slow burning rage versus all out war against each other. And they had that, do you bleed?
I brought that line back.
You know, so they really worked hard at it, and I'll give them credit for that. And these are great characters, but I will damn this movie with faint praise and call it cute.
Oh.
Because they really worked at it, but it wasn't good enough, I don't think.
I agree. I think it was, my word is flat. They had all the ingredients, but the souffle didn't rise when they baked it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care about these characters. I don't enjoy most of these scenes. Like, it's too bad. Because I didn't like Batman vs. Superman, but I loved Ben Affleck as Batman in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not like him very much in this movie.
Yeah, he was more likable in this film, and I didn't.
Because, again, like, you know, what was there to him? He was just, I've been doing this 20 years, and now we need a team. And it's just like, all right.
Well, Jason Momoa, like, giving fish to a town? Like, couldn't you find a better way to integrate him into 21st century life? I don't know. But I did like the waves crashing around him as he walked. Like, it was visually
visually
cool.
Yeah, yeah, they did some pretty cool things with the soundtrack.
It was Danny Elfman, by the way.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think it was the White Stripes song played around Aquaman. Yes. That was like totally cool. They could have used that in other places. And
the White Stripes and Aquaman like really gel. Right?
Yeah. And of course, they brought in the themes of the other superheroes. Like, I enjoyed the Batman theme.
The Batman theme was very really subtle. Cool. Yeah.
When the Wonder Woman and the Superman, like, I've enjoyed the music of these films. Like, I have them on my playlist, to be perfectly honest with you.
Sure.
And the first Superman and the Man of Steel, where they have the music and the Wonder Woman theme, generates some action in your ear. And I will give it that. But like you said, it has ingredients. They just missed the salt or yeast, right, or something that makes it rise.
Yeah, there you go. So that's unfortunate. I've been looking forward to this movie for a long time, but it sounds like we don't recommend it, or at least not strongly.
Well, as you would say, walk, don't run.
Yeah, there you go.
Or,
see this movie.
Or just sit in your chair and wait for it to come out on demand or something.
Or at your local library in 6 months. Come and pick it up off the shelf.
Yes.
At Des Plaines Public Library in, the summer, something like that?
I'd say, spring, summer,
Yeah, just watch it that way. Don't worry about the theater on this one. Don't worry about running out and spending $15 or whatever you need to do.
There's some movies that are terrible enough for us to say, don't, but this one I think people should give it a chance, I think, but for us it didn't work.
It wasn't awful. I didn't walk out. I didn't hate every minute in the theater, but I've just, it's...
You didn't yell "you're done" in the middle of it?
No, I didn't. I didn't throw up my arms and yell "I'm done" the way I did during Batman v Superman. That's right. So we'll move on next. That was our DC portion of the podcast. Now let's move on to our Marvel portion of the podcast with Thor Ragnarok. It is the third Thor movie, technically, but it's also kind of a group coming together, very different from Justice League. It's not the Avengers, exactly. It's not Iron Man and Captain America, but it is Hulk, and it is, a couple of newcomers and things like that. So what did you guys think of Thor Ragnarok?
It was pretty amazing. It was like one of the first superhero movies in a long time, if ever, that I just immediately wanted to watch again as soon as I was done watching it, because it was funny. There were jokes constantly, but the story was really cool. The fantasy was really cool. Like, the planet they visited has an awesome cast, and they all play off of each other brilliantly, and the soundtrack's awesome. Everything that could have been wanted out of another Thor movie. It was a great follow-up to the first Thor movie, which was funny and adventurous and all of this. But in a totally different way. Like, the director, Taika Waititi, brought something unique to the Marvel universe. And it was just like, now he has to eventually do another Marvel movie because this was just so different.
As opposed to Justice League, it was brightly colored. It was very funny. It was energetic. I cared about every one of these characters, even the new ones. Like Valkyrie, and Heimdall's not a new character, but he played a totally different MO in this movie, and I was absolutely into that, where he's like still a guardian, but now he's a guardian of the people as opposed to the pathway. It at times was almost like a buddy cop movie between Thor and Hulk, which I think is a fantastic idea, because those two actors were able to play off each other very well. Well, Bruce Banner, more specifically, is like kind of weak, kind of nervous. Whereas Thor is mega confident and always willing to take whatever risk he needs to take. And Bruce Banner is like, let's not take too many risks because, one, he's a small scientist. But, two, things could go very bad for him because he could become the Hulk and destroy everything and all his friends and their only chance of escape or whatever. I thought it was fantastic. It came within an inch of Guardians 2. Guardians 2 is probably my favorite comic book movie of the year. But this came close. This came real close to being better than that.
I wish they would have made a one-off film of Hulk. I love, as you were mentioning, I love that character and I love what they're doing. Mark Ruffalo, I don't even have the words to describe how much I enjoy watching him play.
Sure.
Bruce Banner. He is nervous and edgy and concerned and yet likable and kind of like common sense. And the Hulk, even. This was the closest I think I'll come to watching this modern Hulk in a one-off movie. And you're right. I enjoyed the interplay between Thor and the Hulk and Thor and Bruce Banner. And the Technicolor sound as well as the view, and it's just it was very mind-boggling to see Taika Waititi bring his I don't want to say it's not even comedy, it's just easy instant laugh to the screen. Like, he just catches you off guard a lot of times in a lot of the stuff he does, and you're laughing before even realizing it.
Yeah, it's almost a strange thing. Like, people are often smiling in this movie, and people are often happy in this movie. Mm-hmm. Jeff Goldblum's character is the bad guy. He's a bad guy. But he's always happy, and he's got his arms open, and he's always smiling, and he's always welcoming, even while he sentences you to death. And
it's such a great role.
He's likable somehow.
Such a great role for Jeff Goldblum, too.
The ruler of a garbage planet. Yeah.
They nailed that one as well.
Someone eccentric, yet somehow commanding. And I couldn't believe it when they had that like giant hologram of him in the arena, like talking to all those people, and they're all cheering for Grandmaster and things like that. That was amazing.
Yeah.
To contrast it with the last movie we talked about, but they didn't cover up his face with makeup in the wrong way. They'd use this makeup and weird coloring to basically take his awkward eccentricity and just turn it up to 11, you know, and his costuming and everything. He was just colorful and pointy and, you know, just they just hit all the right notes on that character. And then there's the other villain, Cate Blanchett, who, like, the main storyline of the real villain is also really compelling. It's very much more straightforward in the sense that there's someone who's really way more powerful and is going to take over Asgard and all that, but it's she was pretty terrifying. I actually thought it was kind of almost a missed opportunity that they didn't go into more of how evil she could be, because she just killed, I think, is one of the things that she was really good at.
Right.
Because Cate Blanchett has the ability to just, like, turn on that switch of, you're really scary right now with that face, and you're not even like scowling at me. You're smiling at me.
Maybe too old to use the word swagger, but the way she walks into the throne room and sits on the throne like it's always been hers, like absolutely worked.
She was definitely channeling her Queen Elizabeth at that point, I think. But yeah, she does. Starting with that movie and onwards, she's got this ability to either freeze or warm your heart. Mm-hmm. Much better than I'm thinking of Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
Sure.
This was a much better role for her, I thought.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Led Zeppelin said, okay, you can use the Immigrant song. But to me, that song was screaming to be used with Thor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a Viking song.
Yeah.
And when I initially saw the trailer and they're using it, I almost just like stood up and like pumped my fist because that's just what Thor is. Like, that's it's everything about, like, is this song. And I was happy to see it included in the film as well.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of, you know, what is the end of times and Loki.
Yes, we haven't even gotten to Hiddleston and Cumberbatch, and and don't forget Anthony Hopkins is in this movie too.
Yeah, you know? It's you almost forget where you are for 2 hours, and it's a fun ride. To get philosophical for a second, when you watch a movie about superheroes, you know, where were they based on? They're in the comic books, and it really kind of, this is the comic book movie.
Yeah,
you know, it had some depth to it, but it also let you have fun. Mm-hmm. It was a fun watch. I almost felt like I was, like, reading this film.
Sure. Mm-hmm. It was an issue of Heavy Metal come to life in a lot of ways. You know?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the colors and a lot of cosmic environments, you know. As they flew through space from one planet to the other, or actually flew in spaceships along the surface of a garbage planet and all of that.
Right.
And in this movie, again, I'm comparing to Justice League, unfortunately, but the two-offs kind of worked. Like, I loved Thor and Loki. I loved Thor and Doctor Strange, you know? I liked these characters in these little moments. You know, Doctor Strange just made an appearance. He's not super relevant to the plot. But still, just like the two of them talking to each other was...
It helped to flesh out Thor's character.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It accomplished something in the plot. It accomplished something in the character arc to have those two talk to each other.
Well, and it helped develop Doctor Strange as well for future.
For the Infinity War. Absolutely.
But as far as the home of Asgard and Heimdall protecting the people, I refer to it the Two Towers, the Lord of the Rings, and Rohan is running away, and there's like 300 of them. And, I mean, they wanted you to believe it was more. But I had the same, I guess it's just personal, but I had the same little bit of sense of disbelief, like that's all there is to this
land. In Asgard, sure.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But it's kind of like the story of, I heard a story one time where a wife and a husband are watching TV and the talking horse or something was on the plane. He had to be on the plane and the plane ran out of fuel, so they had to ask the horse, to fly the plane, but they had to fly it backwards for some reason. Her husband said, "That's crazy. A horse can't fly a plane backwards." You know, here I am picking apart the smallness of Asgard with all these flying people and people turn into Hulk and stuff like that.
Sure.
But you have to kind of understand the breadth of Asgard. You know, there's a limit to how much you can show in a movie, obviously. But I just sometimes have a tough time looking at that. Like, you know, okay, we just herded every single person
onto a spaceship.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
How many people actually live in Asgard? Is it only 300? Is it thousands upon thousands? I don't
know. Right. It
seemed like as many extras as they could get to show up for a hot dog, right?
And a big wolf. Let's just move on to the huge. That was a great touch.
Yeah, it was.
And the fact that the Hulk would just, like, not even care and just run right towards it. And, you know, in fact, he was even trying to fight when they were trying to run away. They had to growl.
I
love that aspect of it, too. They really showed the Hulk's character with that. So I thought they were really true to the characters. They really understood and developed the characters, I think, a lot better than the Justice League.
Yeah.
It's really unfair to compare these two.
It is. Way,
but it's kind of what we...
But.
Unfortunately, they came out within like a month and a half.
I know,
two months, 3 weeks apart, and they're Marvel and DC, so the comparisons lend themselves to you know, that coincidence. What a great new Hulk, though. This was a different Hulk. This was a Hulk who could laugh, who could tell jokes, who could be sarcastic, you know, but still in a very Hulk way, just with like a word or two, or a curl of his lip, or a sneer on his face. Could make you laugh, or, you know, make you scared, or anything like that. You know, just Hulk flippantly tells him, "Yeah, the plane's outside." And Thor's like, "We can leave." And Hulk's like, "Why would you want to leave?" Like, he had no idea that was the plan. You know, Hulk's like, "This place is great. Let's just hang out and be friends." Yeah. So Thor Ragnarok. If you haven't seen the previous movies, I'd recommend you watch the two Thor movies before you see this one. But it's not essential. If you've never seen a comic book movie and you can only pick one, like, this might be the one to go to.
Yeah. I think that it's interesting with the Justice League. It's a lot of focusing in on what's happening on Earth, what's going on. And Marvel seems to take a bigger perspective.
Yeah.
Look at the galaxy and the universe as a whole.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought that was pretty interesting as well. But yeah, it definitely would see this at the soonest opportunity.
Yeah.
Including in the theater.
In the theater if you can.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, it's been a few weeks, yeah.
It's one of those movies.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's a strong recommendation from all of us. As I mentioned earlier, if you haven't seen the previous movies, we've got them at the library. We got Thor 1 and 2. We've got Avengers 1 and 2. That'll certainly get you caught up. And then get you ready for Infinity War, which is the next Avengers movie. That's next summer. That's like May or something like that.
It's just unbelievable. It's only a few months away. Yeah,
I know. I know. I think that's going to be remarkable. That's the Russo brothers again, the guys who did the latter Captain America movies. So they did Civil War. They did Winter Soldier. They certainly know these characters and they know how to make a movie. So. All right. Well, that will do it for the Pint and Click podcast. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.